Welcome to Life and Sirens, Behind and On the Scene, a podcast by first responders. We're your hosts, Sophie,
Jamie,
and Aubrey.
The content provided in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any medical institutions, emergency medical services, or healthcare organizations. Patient privacy is a top priority, and all discussions involving real-world emergency situations are de-identified and altered to ensure confidentiality. Always consult with a qualified healthcare professional or your local EMS protocols before making any decisions regarding patient care or medical practices. Listener discretion is advised, as some topics may include discussions of real-world emergency situations.
Welcome to another episode of Life and Sirens. Today we're going to be talking about tachycardia.
Say it.
Tachy, but stable is the theme of the episode today.
Otherwise known as the Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, I like that one. The Fast and the Furious, when tachycardia talks before the blood pressure drops.
Dun, dun, dun.
Bum, ba, do, boo.
Okay, let me ask you this. When you see tachycardia, and I'm talking like tachycardia 130s.
Okay, okay.
In a middle-aged person.
Yeah.
Does that alarm you?
No.
Why not?
Nothing alarms me.
I'm broken inside.
I'm just kidding.
Never
sorry.
Be alarmed. No, 130s can be compensatory for many a issue.
So it doesn't alarm you in the sense of like you need to act on it.
Correct.
But get your antennas up. That you need to investigate.
Yeah, 130s or something going on.
I like it. Is that anxiety?
It could be potentially, but it would be, well,
I thought you'd have to be freaking.
Yeah, that's at the bottom of my list. It's hard to, like, anxious tack your way into 130s. Like, 110s, 120s. I mean, yeah, a little bit, but.
That's one of my pet peeves. If they're tachycardic and they're just chilling, unless they're literally, like, hyperventilating, crying, screaming, like, it takes a lot for, like, a healthy person to get their heart rate up like that from just panicking.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It does. That is very, very low on my list. Yeah.
Yes, agreed. The very first, and we say this all the time, well, really, I say this all the time, what is the very first sign and symptom of shock?
Anxiety.
Anxiety.
Good job, guys. That was beautiful.
It's my anxiety, baby.
Exactly.
So don't be so quick to just write this off as anxiety.
If you're one of those medics, we all know this medic. We all know him. We all have one. And I want to fight them. If you chalk everything up to anxiety, you're missing a lot of stuff.
So many things. Sometimes people are anxious because they're very ill.
Also, some people could be minorly ill. Like, I'm just going to call out one of my ex-boyfriends. You both know him. I love him. Still talk to him to this day. But if he was sick in any way, he would have, like, a panic attack. Because he had, like, health anxiety. You can, like, still have things wrong.
Yeah, and you're like, well, you are sick. However, this is a lot. Yeah.
We had a patient the other day who was full-blown in a panic attack. Has a history of panic attacks. This happened after they threw up. And then they started panicking. But I did a 12 lead, as you should, in anxiety. And he had the biggest T waves I'd ever seen. I was like, sir, do you have any medical history? None. None that he knows of. Now he does, but.
And now he has a history of hyperkalemia.
Investigate. Yes, we got to the hospital. We let them know this. It did take a while to figure it out, but his potassium was 8.2.
That'll do it.
That'll make you anxious for sure. Mm-hmm.
Do the 12 lead.
Just do the 12 lead. So let's talk about AFib RVR.
Ah.
And when you pull the trigger on treating pharmacologically.
Oh, AFib RVR is tough because it's the granny getter. Mm-hmm. It is almost always in elderly populations and they have so many comorbidities, but more importantly, they take so many meds. And that's really tough to figure out, like, are we just tachycardic because we're ill?
I will say,
but like, because we have AFib, we're just AFib tachycardia.
Yeah, a lot of the AFib with RVR that I've seen goes away when you get fluid.
Yes.
Grannies always be dehydrated.
They do. Because they don't want to get up and go pee.
Yeah. They're on Lasix already.
I've only had a handful of AFib's RVR that was truly just out of the blue RVR.
Yes.
That had to get cardizem and then get cardioverted and like all the things.
Yeah.
But most of them are secondary to something else, like a UTI or, you know, the other granny things.
The beautiful thing about tachycardia being stable is that you have so much time to investigate, and you get to get a good history on these patients, which is going to be the most important thing. You get to rule out all of your other things, like are they febrile? Are they... anything
else? Are they on drugs?
I'm trying to think of things that we can rule out.
Are they really febrile? Did they just get back from a run?
I have to say cocaine? This immediately, Jamie. I'm so sorry. It's really distracting me. Your arms look so good.
Thank you.
I just thought you should know. Welcome to the pod lab.
Thanks, so.
And we have such a, and it's such a good light.
That is true. Yeah, it's like a nice glow.
Yeah.
We got a new sign in the pod lab. Sorry. Thank you, Haley Richards, Officer Richards, EMT Advanced as well. she got us a new sign. We'll post it on our socials.
It's beautiful.
It is. It's so pretty.
All right. I'm so sorry. The grannies, it could be anything.
It could literally be anything.
It is. And you can rule out so many things. Like, do they smell like a UTI? Do they have a fever? Are they hypovolemic, which they often are?
Yeah.
What is their end title?
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun. My favorite question.
Right? Do we have a poor perfusion status? And maybe that's why we're in AFib with RVR? What's going on?
What is going on?
I feel like a lot of true AFib with RVRs are like younger geriatric population or like...
Yeah, mine have been 60...
Middle age or like, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mine have been 60-year-old women.
Yep.
Every time.
Yep. And they're usually otherwise healthy. Mm-hmm. I feel like.
Yeah, that's really, they just are like, I have AFib, and now my heart is beating so fast.
I just have palpitations.
Mm-hmm.
I think that since AFib with RVR is technically defined as anything over 100, providers are very quick to pull the trigger on treatment for something like in the 130s, when really we should be thinking about that as in the same vein as like SVT.
Yeah.
Like you shouldn't be treating something in the 130s because that is a very like compensatory rate.
Yeah.
Now if it's like 180s, 190s, 200s, we can talk about it, but
absolutely.
You should be very slow to pull the trigger on pharmacological intervention of AFib with RVR with a slower rate, even though it is technically
RVR.
RVR.
Especially without having tried other things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm glad you mentioned that, like the compensatory range. Because that's something to think about is, like, how high is the rate? Like, mm-hmm. a lot of the times, if it is, like, 100 to, like, 130, 140, even 150, like, that's usually secondary to something else that's probably not cardiac.
And think about what's our intention with treating AFib with RVR? Like, our goal is to maintain perfusion status. Mm-hmm. So if our patient is not poorly perfusing... It may still make me a bit uncomfy that their rate's like in the 150s, but if their perfusion status is good, they're not altered, they're not having any pain.
You have time to try.
Yeah, at that point, our reason for treating
is because you can.
Yeah, isn't found. You know. Yeah.
Yes, I think this is going to be a shout out for Alex Whitley. He did a very good job in school. He's one of the paramedic instructors at one of our local colleges. And he did a great job of outlining, like, different heart rates, meaning different pathologies. And I still think about that, like, every day.
It's so true.
It is so true. Like, if you ever see a heart rate, anything, like, above 150, like, that 150 to 160s range, that is usually indicative of, like, a cardiogenic shock. It's still, like, a compensatory or decompensating shock, but usually that's, like, a cardiogenic shock. And then anything above that is, like, SVT or AFib with RVR. Knowing your rates and like expecting when you look at this patient and you're about to put them on the monitor, you could probably guess what you're about to find, what numbers you're about to find on the monitor. And if something doesn't line up with what you are expecting to see, then it's time to investigate a little bit more because maybe we missed something in the initial.
Yeah, when you first got out of medic school, or it might have been while you were still in medic school, that was something that I did not learn in medic school, that there is like a general trend with tachycardic rates. And, like, ranges where you can, it gives you a good, like, avenue to kind of go down.
Yeah.
You know, it gives you a good idea. And I did not realize that was a thing. And so it was basically just like 0 to this is good, and 100 to 150 is okay.
0 to 100.
zero is good.
And it just, I did not know. It was just the like giant ranges.
I don't think we really teach it.
Yeah, like prior to 180, just be like, oh.
And also there are some novice providers who may, they'll be like 100, above 100, panic. Like
immediate.
I feel like fever is like up to 120 in an adult. And then above 120, maybe we're septic. Yeah. Above that, maybe be more concerned.
Right, and
like,
if you're at young adults or old adults, dehydration can really affect heart rate. Yeah. You know, there's a lot.
Supplements, energy drinks, caffeine, pre-workout. There's just
so many.
Everything. Life.
So if you're in a little bit of like a lower rate, if you're that 100 to 130, we're looking for some maybe social, environmental, some like small stressors, right? Maybe we're febrile. Maybe we're a little bit dehydrated. Things that are very reversible that are not cardiac related. And then that 130s to like, probably like 160s, digging a little bit deeper, looking for maybe some cardiac causes, maybe some metabolic issues, things like that.
It's
and
like
then
a yellow flag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then above 160 is where I start really being
something's very
concerned.
Wrong. Are you bleeding to death currently?
Yes. This is where I'm concerned. That's 160 to 180. I'm concerned that we have like massive blood loss somewhere. And above 180, it is a arrhythmia.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah. We had a patient not too long ago that was in AFib RVR, and well, stand by. We'll get to that. We walk in, and the history seemed very like a sepsis pathology. All the markers were there, and it was one of those moments where I was like expecting to put them on the monitor and see a rate of like 130, 140, 150 even. And we put this lady on the monitor, and it was a rate of 180 to like 210. And I was like, whoa. Something's not adding up here. So that was one that we had to do like quite a bit of digging, which thankfully they were coming from a facility. So we had like pretty recent labs to look at and things like that. But yeah, that's just one of those that it doesn't quite end up what you were expecting. And it makes you have to
and
dig
that
a
one,
bit.
Our theory there was that she was in some beginning stages of sepsis. She was hitting a lot of those markers, but it seemed like really a metabolic stressor caused the AFib with RVR. Like it,
and there was also a potential for blood loss
with
that patient as well.
Sometimes
it's everything.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of things.
Like I think she truly was in AFib with RVR as like a cardiac cause, but I think it was precursed. Yeah, what is that? Oh, there's a word.
My God, that seems not right.
Precursor?
But it was.
It was predisposed? No.
Oh my God, that's religion. No, that's predestination.
I do think that.
You gotta keep that.
I do think that she. I think that she was an AFib with RVR and it was a good cardiac cause, but I think it was secondary to sepsis prior that she just became in such a metabolic stress state that her heart was also like, oh, I'll do stuff.
Yeah, time to jump on board.
Right. But like, so did we treat that?
So we treated that with a fluid bolus because this person was hypotensive as well. Their mentation remained fine throughout our assessment, throughout transport. We did do a fluid bolus, but we were very hesitant to treat the AFib RVR with any sort of medication. She had so many underlying issues that it made it very hard for me to pull the trigger on that.
It's really a chicken or the egg.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what's going to help.
Sometimes it's everything causing it, and sometimes it's just like nothing. It's just the heart. One thing I want to talk about while we're talking about some atypical or complicated causes of tachycardia, I want to talk about hyperbolic.
I want to talk about hyperbolic.
Hyperbole. I want to talk about hypermetabolic behavioral emergencies.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
And those patients and their tachycardias.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me just, this is a hill that I will die on.
Go ahead and park right here.
So I just want to remind everyone that we're not always just medicating What the frick? We're not always...
Hyper bottles.
We're not always medicating hypermetabolic behavioral emergency patients just because they're acting, like, bizarre and unusual and, like, yeah. strange and combative yes. always. They're usually not even combative.
Only part of it is for, like, right. crew safety.
Right. The rest of it is for patient safety in the way of, like... We have to slow this down.
And, like, medical safety as well, not yes. just, like, physical safety.
These patients will go into cardiac arrest, okay?
Yeah, like the one that coded on the roof?
Yes, we mm-hmm. had a call at our service some time ago where a patient went into cardiac arrest on a roof. And that was because they were in a hypermetabolic state.
Yeah.
And they were super tachycardic. And, like, it is hard to contain those patients sometimes. Everyone yeah. is different. But, like...
Mm-hmm. And that one was not for the crew that ran that call. That one was not for, like, lack of medicating. They weren't like, oh, we're not going to do it. Just they like, just couldn't get to them.
Yeah. Yeah, the patient was on a roof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Patient so by access
the,
was an issue.
By the time they were able to actually access the patient, they had really exerted themselves to a degree that yes. there was no... We're kind of already down
they
that hill.
They are metabolizing themselves to death. Like, yeah. you... like.
You so, if you to. Had a patient... that I was lucky enough to be a supervisor that day. And he had presented to the ER in a quite a state. He was in rhabdo. He had an AKI. All the things. Well, he left AMA.
From the ICU.
Yeah. And then when we re-encountered him, they called. And he was in a hypermetabolic state. His Absolutely. Heart rate was like 170 to 180, yep. maybe even higher.
Yeah. At times when he got excited.
Yes. And he presented almost manic.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the way I would describe it. But he was very, he was super nice.
Yeah.
He was really like reasonable. You could talk with him.
He was like, yeah, guys, I screwed up. Yeah. Here we are.
But he was he'd talk a million miles a minute. And yeah. He was like a little wild.
Yeah. Like your typical, and I'm just going to use this term because we've all heard it. And we've honestly abused it. Is like, you would present like someone who's like, quote unquote, tweaking. Like yes. That was it.
Yes, absolutely. It looked like he had probably done a whole lot of meth except for minus the meth.
Right.
And this patient was compliant. And so Soph was able to start a line on him. And was able to medicate him for that emergency to slow down his metabolic rate.
Yes.
To basically stop eating his muscles and kidneys Absolutely. And all the things. Because he was already so far down.
Yes. We know he was sick enough to be in the ICU. And then he yeah. went out and he did what he did. And he took these drugs. He let us know that. And he was like, man, I screwed up. And we're like, yeah.
He's
bro.
Like, I did so many drugs. I've been awake for 4 days. Yes. And we're like, ah.
We got to do something about that. So that's one of those where they might, they're so active, you're like, oh, they're fine.
Yeah.
Until they're not.
Until they're not. And Soph got some pushback on that call because in our brains, we're taught that treating a hypermetabolic behavioral emergency is just for the behavioral aspect.
Right.
But actually, it's not. It's for the metabolic aspect. Thankfully, it makes us safer a lot of the time, but it's for the metabolic aspect. And because he was compliant... The argument was that he never should have been medicated, which is absolutely not true.
Yeah,
but that's one of my favorite calls because yeah. it was so he was tacky, he was all the things, and
but
you,
he didn't want to hurt us.
Yeah, and you himself. Called it correctly, and you're like, I'm still going to sedate him, and I said, oh, this is great.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we were able to get a line. We gave him fluids. We mm-hmm. gave him all the things that he needed, and
yeah.
he had a positive outcome.
He did.
Yeah. Can we talk about real quick how like physically how those patients present? Like, what are like. True markers that we can see in the field to be like, this is a hypermetabolic state?
I would say from like back of the yeah. room, like you are getting on scene. If they are standing very straight and are very sweaty.
Yeah. Diaphoretic. Is
yeah. If talk. They appear to be super, super alert, but are also yeah. really diaphoretic, that's my first indicator.
Yeah.
Just from far away. Yeah, that's what I'm dealing
they
with.
They don't necessarily present ill, but mm-hmm. yeah, they're yeah. usually a little erratic, even if they're like standing still, like they're just going to be like Move. Shaking or twitching yep. or moving.
And a lot of times their interaction with other people
yeah.
is very scattered.
And very like, it's like clips, just very short, like yeah. choppy
For
interaction.
Sure.
I think we see it a lot in our service area. I wouldn't say a lot. We see it more than most service areas.
Yeah.
Probably in our state. We do. That's just something we run. We're very familiar with it. We could all run those calls very well. I know I don't doubt that anyone at this service that we work for could handle that call well, because we see it enough. But if you don't see it enough, it's kind of one of those things where you probably will look at this person and be like, what?
Yeah, what is going on?
It doesn't look like another
presentation.
It doesn't look like, It just doesn't look, your spidey, you just know.
And these patients are not talk downable. Like, you are unable to talk them down.
Yes.
There is no, make the effort every time. Because there's a chance that this patient maybe did some drugs and they're just being a little wild.
Yeah.
But they are able to control it. Attempt to talk them down every single time, because if you don't, you're going to get yourself into some hairy situations where you didn't even try to assess your patient. But these patients, you're not going to be able to.
Yeah.
It's going to be really difficult to get them on your same wavelength. Even if they start to interact with you appropriately, their like metabolic state will not change.
Let me just say this. These patients are very sick. They're very sick. They don't look very sick. They're very sick.
Yes. They're probably the most unstable patients that we deal with. Second to dialysis patients, oddly enough.
Yeah. So we were talking about patients who might be tachycardic but look really sick and not have other compensatory mechanisms like in place, like maybe their blood pressure is fine, they're just tachycardic, they're just these patients, they don't look sick, they're just acting like Donnie from the Wild Thornberries
for real.
That's honestly maybe what they all sound like.
I think that the one of the biggest markers for these patients, for this patient population, if you already have a suspicion that this is going on, is that they'll be hyperthermic. I know that that's not always on your radar to like get a temperature on these people, but if it's on your radar and that's what you're suspecting, get a temperature on these people, and if they're hyperthermic, like, you pretty much have your answer.
And a lot of times they're hyperthermic to the degree that you can touch, feel it, like it is radiating.
They look hot.
yeah
for sure.
And truthfully, very in my experience, which I can't say this is the case everywhere all the time, but in my experience with patients who are hypermetabolic behaviorals, they're usually not violent unless they're, like, scared. Like, typically, if they're going to hurt anybody, it's going to be themselves. It's going to be just because of they're just being negligent. They're just not realizing that they're being reckless.
Most I think inflicted damage that they have ever done was, like, with patients that I've had, have been intrusive thoughts that one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's no impulse control.
Yes.
And that's really what it kind of came down to.
Sure.
Like LSD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can escalate this if you approach these patients inappropriately. Mm-hmm. And then they may become combative. But very rarely, when we're the first to encounter them, are they combative? Yeah. In my experience.
Most of the time, they're just like, something's wrong.
They're like, I did too much drugs, bro. They usually tell you.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
Because they know they're sick.
Right. It's like when teenagers smoke weed or do a gummy.
Call 911.
And they call 911 and they're like, I did drugs.
All right. Well, first time.
Cool. Cool.
What other causes of tachycardia are like sneaky, but like could appear in a otherwise normal, healthy patient?
Maybe like a blunt trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Trauma. If your patient is tachycardic above 150, you need blood yesterday.
Like immediate.
Immediately. That's not pain. That's not. Mm-hmm. That is, we are losing blood. So.
And put that homie on an end title.
Yeah.
Or like blunt trauma to the chest.
Yeah.
Like you could, then you need to be thinking about like a tension pneumo. Or
a tamponade. Hallucinogens. I know that we went on like the kind of drug route, but I think most time when we think of that, we think of like meth and crack and things like that. But like hallucinogens can make you extremely tachycardic. I'm starting to see it a lot more with like gas station THC products.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just about to say
they will be
that.
Tachycardic to the umpteenth degree.
To the point where they do need like actual medical intervention.
Yeah.
Like, they do need help.
The ones that we've had that, like, one girl, she ate a whole Rice Krispie treat from the gas station. That was what she was supposed to eat, like, a kernel.
They get pale, sweaty, and syncopized.
They look like they are about to die.
Yes.
And this lady was hypotensive.
Yep, she
was. She was so tacky, she got
her pressure was, like, 60 palp. And then she was tacky, like, 180.
And that's the patient. So, you know, we talked about, like, hypotension. Like, when we're seeing it, it's typically earlier in the sepsis world, but, like, nobody is that hypotensive usually unless it's something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something to think about.
Yeah.
For sure. And otherwise healthy.
Yeah.
It's not like, well, she's been sick for a week and we've kind of gone down
this
path.
She's got a central line.
Yeah, no, it's like she went to this gas station and ate this Rice Krispie and now did this.
Yes. It's probably the Rice Krispie.
It's probably that wild little Trix Krispie.
Yeah, that'd be f***ing some people up.
It really does.
I think I've mentioned this before, but I've had somebody ask me to call their time of death.
Yeah. That's my favorite
story. We did talk
about
that.
Yeah. Well, on that, I'm like, whew.
She said, yeah, but if you were to call my time of death, what time would it be?
It would not be any time because you're not dead.
You're not dead.
There was no convincing her of that. I tried so hard. And finally, I was like, all right, time of death.
I said, sure.
Yeah, there's lots of, like, stimulants, drug-related things.
What about seizures?
Seizures. Yeah. Let's talk about seizures.
Yeah, people that are postictal are almost always going to be tachycardic. If they're not, it is a rare presentation. But they're almost always tachycardic. And a lot of times they're, like, pretty tachycardic. Like, up in, like, the 130s, 140s initially. Mm-hmm. If you encounter them quickly after said seizure activity. Yeah, a lot of times you'll encounter somebody at, like, the 130s, 140s. And then as their postictal phase kind of progresses, they will start to become less tachycardic. But if you're, like, new and maybe you don't see seizures a lot.
Yeah. Unresponsive and tachycardic.
That could be concerning.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Especially if it was unwitnessed or things like that. If you have somebody that has really no other findings except for that they're unresponsive and tachycardic.
That's concerning.
Consider seizure. Yeah.
The other thing I want to talk about is what medications can cause tachycardia. Especially, why don't we start with the ones that we have?
Albuterol.
Yeah.
Atropine.
Atropine, epi.
Epi.
Duona.
Dex.
Dex.
Yeah.
Ketamine. Benadryl. Yeah. Please, for the love of God, if you're giving Benadryl, pull that up in a 10cc syringe
please.
And push it slow because they're going to get really tachycardic.
They are.
So.
And if you've ever had a paradoxical reaction to...
It's terrible.
Phenergan or Benadryl or any of it makes you want to pull off your own skin.
Literally makes you want to open the ambulance doors and run out. So just keep that in
don't
mind.
Don't do that.
It can make you very tachycardic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some of the things that we could give. So if you gave something and now all of a sudden your patient's becoming tachycardic, consider it's your fault.
Absolutely.
Consider you are the culprit.
It is okay.
You're the problem.
I did this.
Yeah. So just be prepared that some things you're going to do are going to make people tachycardic.
And that's okay.
Yeah. And even like sometimes people are bradycardic and we try to correct that and they become tachycardic. It just is what it is.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest like cluster calls I ever had was remember the other day how you got to put hypotension to hypertension because of his baroreceptor issues?
Yes.
I had a bradycardic to tachycardic. Because I gave atropine and it like kind of worked, but his pressure was trash. And so then we ended up doing like an epi drip, which was necessary and our medication got better and all the things. But then even after we cut the epi off because his heart rate like maintained, he got so tachycardic. He was like in the 140s. And then I was like, what do I do?
Yeah.
Do I medicate this now?
Complications, tachycardia.
Yeah, it was very much a I did this, but also.
We needed to.
Yeah.
Definitely the lesser of two evils.
Yeah. I just was hoping that it would, like, go to, like, 90.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it said...
Yeah, when I had to show up and they're like, didn't you call this in as bradycardia? And I said, yes.
Yes, and I stand by that. Let me explain.
I promise.
So, basically, what we've learned here is that anything and everything will make you tachycardic.
Will make
pretty
you
much,
tachycardic.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, clearly, we did not talk about, like, really, like, your treatment for SVT and VTAC and how to recognize it and all those things because we all have ACLS. So
do
all
that.
All the boring ones. You give the drugs. You shocky the buttons.
Yeah.
You know?
This is just, we just wanted to talk about some things that you may not see every day that you should maybe have on your radar in certain scenarios.
For sure. Ooh. What about torsades?
Ooh, I've had the most torsades in this room.
I have never. So
I've had three cardiac arrests with torsades.
Did you get the Maggie Mags?
Yes, and every single one we got Roscon.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And there was one. I think I have a video of it on my TikTok. But there's an episode of a true. Honestly, if there's gonna be a mega code.
Yeah, it's going to be you.
It is. And it was a mega code. And we were like, is this torsades? And I need to find it because still to this day, I'm like, that could be the fourth one. But, like, was it Torsades? We literally are like, is this Torsades? Because it, like, looks like that polymorphic.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's also really, like, short. Like, it's not tall. Yeah. Like
it is
big,
normally.
Yeah, like normal VTAC and
right.
stuff.
Right. They always describe Torsades as twisting and turning. Except for that, like, I think it looks like a sound wave.
It does.
Waxing and waning.
Yeah, no, I'm like big, small, big, small, big, small.
Yes. That's exactly what it looks like. Yeah. And that's what it looks like. It almost looks like if you had V-fib, that was like little big, little bit. It was
yes.
very weird.
Yes, if it was like more organized V-fib.
Yes, that's what it looked like.
For sure. I think that always, my brain, when they say twisting and turning, wants to try to make it 3D.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. Like, I want it to basically be like a double helix. That's like what I'm picturing, but sideways.
I mean,
it really screwed me up until finally someone was like, nah, James, it just like gets big and gets small. I said, thanks, Austin.
Polymorphic VTAC.
Thank you.
Yep. Yep.
We've had a lot. So what we've learned today is anything and everything can cause tachycardia. Also, if it's normal and you know what to do, you know what to do. Follow ACLS.
Absolutely. And if it's abnormal and you're not sure,
investigate
some more.
Investigate.
Entitle.
And if you're not concerned with like fluid overload, try some little fluid bolus.
Also, even if someone is quote unquote fluid overloaded, they usually aren't intravascularly.
That is the best lesson that I ever learned.
Yeah.
Is that, and it was just a doc at our local hospital. And I was like, yeah, like we were like pretty like sparse with fluid. We only gave like 250. Their pressure's still not great, but they have a history of CHF. They're clearly overloaded. We've got like pitting edema, all the things. He was like, oh yeah, you can still be volume down even though you've third spaced all your fluid.
So use your said, detective skills. Y'all are
duh.
Smart.
That mm-hmm. makes so much sense. But my brain is just so ingrained in our heads.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And also like be cautious. Like just know your job. Be
Don't
a
pressure
clinician.
Bag a liter of fluid
right.
into them, but maybe like you can do 250 and 10
250,
and see.
250,
yeah.
yeah.
For sure. Yeah. So just, you know, do the things or don't do the things.
Do
but
the
investigate
12 lead,
to decide what things you're going to do or not do. 12 lead, end title, your two
lead.
New best friends.
If yep. someone's anxious, do the 12 lead.
Yeah, do the 12 lead.
If you're putting someone on the 4 lead,
just do the 12 lead.
Do the 12 lead. I just looked at our camera. That's not here. Because I want you to look me in the eye when I say that.
When I say this, do the 12 lead.
This has been Life in Sirens, produced by three nerds trying to bring you content that you might actually care about.